You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 4, Generation Loss. Aaron, we didn't really dive into this in the instant take. Let's talk about the title for a second. Generation Loss. What's the deal with that?
I'm glad you mentioned it because it was in my notes because we did forget to talk about it. It refers to the phenomenon in digital copying. We're kind of copy, like, you know, before we had the internet, you might be familiar with your grade school teacher, if you're a Gen Xer or younger, handing out photocopies of assignments, right? It was something, it's like that weird purple thing, the duplicator. You know, you can tell how many years in a row they've duplicated a thing based on how fuzzy the lines are and how crappy the art looked. If you've seen an image meme that's been copied and copied and copied and it starts getting artifacty and jaggy and it starts losing resolution, it's what happens, the destructive part of a copying process. You know, and you can make a perfect digital copy, but this MP3 you're listening to might be, I don't know, what, 100, 150 megabytes. Just my side of the audio when we hand it to our producer is going to be something like a gig. What happened to the rest of that data? Well, it got smashed down so you can play it on your phone. You do that another 50 times and you'd start shuttling. So that's the generation loss digitally. How do you think it affects what's going on in the episode?
I don't know. I was thinking about it. Because in my mind, there is no digital generation loss because you do make digital perfect. Unless you're re-encoding stuff, like I can hit copy paste a billion times on the file that we record here and it will never change.
If you make a loss, what they call a lossless copy.
Yeah, just a one-to-one copy. I can make it a billion times. I can make it 100 billion times, a trillion. Mm-hmm. It'll never change. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's only when you go in and specifically change digital data that you experience any kind of loss. So to me, like it's the opposite. The generation loss doesn't happen with hosts, but it would happen with humans. So maybe they're getting at something like that.
One thing I noticed when I was watching this the third time is there doesn't appear to be any old people anywhere
in Christina's world.
Yeah. In Christina's world, in the desert, Mad Max world that Bernard's navigating through. I wonder if this is also a grim nod to the fact that entire generations have been lost in humanity because they weren't compatible with flies and they were exterminated or...
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense given what we heard Hale say about the flies and how the adults were resistant to it, but the children are so easy to control.
It also reminds me of like Agent Smith when he's interrogating, you know, Morpheus and they're trying to break his mind to get his eye on the first film. And he's talking about how back in the day they tried to create a human paradise to insert humans into and they kept rebelling and entire crops were lost. And Hale talking about how she's perfecting her process and experimenting and she's got these outliers. I also wonder, like, you know, what How many human beings have been lost in that process too? So that's a lot of generation loss.
Is there something about the generation loss and the fidelity checks too, where sort of copying a human from one generation to another, a host body generation, and
there's a little trouble there. If you go back even explicitly, when they went into the forge construct. And shit, who's James Daless' son?
Logan.
Logan, thank you. Logan is kind of like the librarian there. And he's explaining that, like, they used to make perfect copies of humans, and they'd press them into to host bodies, and they'd go berserk, and they didn't work correctly. And then he realized that, oh, that's because I'm making them too perfect. I'm saving too much data. I'm going to compress these humans down. He called it the 10,000 lines of code, essentially. And yeah, then they work perfectly. But do they really, or is there something that the machines are not able to comprehend, and that's just a hat? I think they're playing with a lot of those ideas, which mm-hmm. makes you wonder, you know, and also the fact that, like, Bernard is supposedly a perfect copy of Arnold, but what does that even mean, you know, in the context of, like, he doesn't think of himself as Arnold. He's become his own being because he's had experiences distinct from the original that have gone on to change him and mold him. So it's even one of those things, like, even if you make a perfect copy, like, the second it starts breathing and making decisions, it probably will diverge from what the true original would do pretty quickly.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. And there's definitely something about generation loss maybe in the end with the transition of Caleb from human to host. He says something to Hale about, like, oh, what makes me different is I have something you don't. Or how did you disobey me? I have something you don't.
Pants.
Pants, obviously. But then he immediately is, like, turned into a host, right? Like, we get the 23-year jump and everything. So I wonder if he's lost whatever it was that he had as a human that made him able to disobey.
Yeah, no,
that's,
I think
sort of generation loss.
I think they're interesting questions. I think that my gut feeling about this episode, I think it's been born correct since I've been kind of combing the internet and looking at people's discussions for the past couple of days, that this felt like Westworld confirming a lot of the popular theories and kind of getting them out of the way and clearing the board for the next half of the season, where probably there'll be more mysteries and maybe they're going to get down to actually, because the big mysteries are still on the board. Like, what is Christina? What is the nature of her world? What's the relationship between her and Maya, her and Teddy? You know, what is Hale? Like, if Hale is trying to conquer humanity and keep us all as pets, it seems like she's won. It seems like she's won by the end of this episode. Like, with the exception of a few outliers and people playing Mad Max cosplay in the desert, she's won. So now what? And that's the tenor of the next week on, you know, like, the Man in Black kind of says that, like, you are the queen of your world. You've won it. It's not even only a better world. It's a perfect world. Well, now what? Now what do we do?
Yeah, which is interesting because one person's perfect world could be another's hell. So I wonder how much they're going to play with that.
Especially when you think about Hale's stated goal in the first episode was to make the world safe for her to bring about her children. So, mm-hmm. like, what does that look like? Will her children be horrified by the shape of the world? Will she be honest about how her world came about and what was before it and how it got supplanted? And who the fuck are these callow fuckboys coming down the staircase thinking how awesome Christina's world is?
Their host,
I swear to God, that's
to
my
a
number
one human park. And that's what it is, man. Christina's world is a human park, right?
That, yeah, that's but to what end and why? Why would a robot, you know, I also make it, maybe I'm leaning on what Akichita says about, like, how irrationality seems like a rare flaw in their type. Well, if the hosts are all their type, why would they all engage in something as irrational as revenge, you know, against?
Sure.
Yeah, because revenge is completely irrational. Revenge is, instead of living my life, I'm going to dedicate it to ruining someone else. That's the ultimate in irrationality.
Yeah, it doesn't serve any purpose. It doesn't even make you feel better.
No,
once you get
it's not justice. So, yeah, it's not anything. It's just, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see. That is one of the big mysteries. And yeah, Maya and Teddy being mixed up in it, I feel like, just complicates it more. I have a lot of questions around the end of this episode about what timelines are lining up here. Is is it 100% guaranteed that the timeline Caleb's in at the end, 23 years later or whatever, is the same one that Christina is in? Because talking about generation loss and perfect copies, I could see a host society either very rapidly iterating and progressing, or just staying stagnant for thousands of years, right? Like, this could be the same day that Caleb realizes he's a host, or it could be 100 years later. I don't know.
The only way we'd ever be sure is if we saw C in the same scene with Caleb. Then we could accurately, because now that we know that that is 100% sure his daughter, she is a living yardstick of age. You know,
well, I need to see her in the same scene as Christina, because like Caleb almost certainly, I mean, unless Hale's lying to him, is 23 years into the future. I just wonder if he's in the same timeline as Christina.
Okay, so you would need to see them all three in the same picture. Okay.
Sure, yeah.
Or if we saw
C with Christina would do it too.
Okay, yeah. All right. I wonder if we will get there.
I don't know.
If you remember,
Caleb could act like he's just realized he's a host in the same scene with Christina, and then I might buy it.
Oh, right. Well, but then again, that could be the thousandth or lifetime they brought him back and ran him through the simulation.
Sure.
I see what you're saying, because and like I think we'll end up there, because if you recall, my theory for the Bernard's vision sequences is that was told in a Memento style, like first in, last out. It's like all of the visions he saw first were of the end of the series, and as the vision spooled out, we got to, you know, the moment that he woke up in the hotel room. And so far, that's been, you know, when you think about the sequence of events thus far, you know, we got to the Beetle. Next time, they're going to be heading to Temperance. And then after that, we're going to meet what I'm calling Hale's domicile. And then eventually we get into Christina's world. So probably the next two episodes are going to be fucking around in Temperance, you know, trying to get Maeve back online, trying to, you know, expose to the audience what the hell's going on. And then the final two episodes will be confronting Hale and Hale's world.
Yeah. I don't know. It's exciting. This was a good episode for sure. Looking forward to more of it.
Oh, the other thing I did check out, I don't know if this wasn't in our screener copy or I just didn't, I missed it. But after the credits, when they're doing all the production logos and HBO logo and all that stuff, they've replaced their traditional audio or underlaid it with the low tones, the low frequency generator sounds that are playing throughout the episode. So I thought that was
signal from the tower. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I always think that's kind of fun, because the implication is that Hale's done it. She's broken through into our world and she owns everything, even Warner Brothers Media.
Yeah, you'd think she would have had me rewatch the series, just like start over from episode one again. But
pump up our numbers. Whoa. Right. I got to start a rewatch series. Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hear the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Anyway, maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it.
All right. There's no cold open this time, so we just start off with the intro. And then we get to see what happened at the lighthouse, where Caleb and Maeve infiltrate and detonate another version of Rehoboam. Caleb is shot in the process, and Maeve gets him away from the lighthouse and then uses his limbic implant system to show him what freedom feels like. I did a little research on that because I was curious exactly how that would work, and it seems like it tracks. It seems like it tracks 100%. The limbic system is apparently like the emotional center of the brain, and so, and it also aids in like the formation of memories. And so if she were able to like give him a memory that would make him feel the emotion of freedom, that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's the key thing. She didn't say, I'll show you what freedom looks like. She says, I'll show you what it feels like. So she's essentially pumping the fifth. It reminds me of that Rick and Morty episode where they've captured the one Rick who stayed with his daughter and is happy. And they've captured that moment of being a good father forever in a form of a stick of gum that other Ricks can enjoy to see what it's like to not be a bastard. That's a sweet scene. I think it has utility. Because they show us a brain scan. This, and as far as I know, this is original content. I didn't get this from Reddit or nothing. But they show a brain scan of what the fly is affecting in Caleb's brain.
Yeah, this next scene here. Yep.
And it's right above like where the roof of his, I think it is the limbic system.
Okay.
That mouthpiece interfaces with.
Are they using emotion to control humans? I think that's interesting.
But it also implies that if Maeve found a human that had the limbic system intact, was infected by flies, she might be able to goose that in a way to get rid of the parasite and clear their system. So I wonder, like, how early are children implanted with the limbic system? If they rebuilt Caleb as a host, they surely wouldn't install the limbic system in him.
Wouldn't need to, no.
But Caleb also is not, I don't think he if he's a host, I think he's immune to flies now. I think it's telling that when Hale froze all motor functions at the end of this episode that Caleb did not. But
well,
it could,
I mean,
be
her,
a way.
Her badass point that she's trying to make would be lost on him if he, well, I guess he could freeze motor functions, but not brain function.
Their
sure.
Bulk apprehension.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be, if all these children of the sand have those limbic systems implanted and, Maeve is going to be able to free them en masse, or if there's adults left over, these outliers that still have the limbic, that she can use that to purge. I think they showed her us interfacing with the limbic system more than to give a, oh, isn't that nice that she's sharing the feeling of freedom with Caleb.
Yeah, it could be. I wonder if they, if maybe it, I know it didn't happen because Hale has taken over, but I wonder if they could have made a tab for that with the infections, like just totally blocks your limbic system. You can't feel emotion. You can't create memories.
If you knew it was coming,
but you also can't be controlled by the infection because it shuts down that system. Who knows?
I wonder why Hale needed to take over so many world governments, like at the vice presidential level, if she had this fly thing up her sleeves. Is it like literally to make sure that humans can't resist the like you said, can't do something like roll out a limbic system update that would make them proof, or
could be, or it could just be that they needed to have the park in order to mass infect people. And the park,
they need to grease the wheels that way.
Yeah, the park was very controversial. So,
well, the one wild thing to me is they make it pretty clear in the Making the Westworld reality segment that Hale was in the process of expanding the park. That gravel pit facility was her constructing a new world. And there's like the construction sign said Delos Park, future expansion coming soon. Why the fuck would she be expanding her park if she has one park that's capable of luring the rich and powerful there to fly them? It seems inefficient to continue doing that.
Yeah. I don't know. It would. There's some balance between, well, I don't know. Do hosts think this way? But for humans, it would be a balance between like speed of adoption and resources spent on it. So like maybe there's a tipping point where, you know, two parks make sense because you can get more people through the door, but three parks, yeah, you can still get more people through the door, but it's overkill, you know?
Diminishing returns.
Yeah, I don't know if hosts think that way, but...
Finally, here's something just to cover my ass in case... We didn't learn a lot about this final core. Like, why does Maeve and Caleb think it's the final core? Like, they're showing us the very last play in the human resistance, and it's the final assault on this fortress, and it's just Maeve and Caleb? What happened to the rest of Caleb's men? I'm wondering if there is just a lot of naked trickery on top of this. Like, and I think, again, the show is telling us because, you know, Caleb wakes up with a halo on his head, which I'm like, what time out the fuck? What kind of suspect shit is this? Everything felt clean and like the core drops into a cloud of dust. You don't ever technically see it die. We're taking it in on the word that this is the last battle in the clandestine robot wars. But Caleb has an army of guys he could call, and it's just him and Maeve. I don't know if this stuff adds up.
Yeah, it might not. There are some question marks. Certainly, I do want to talk about that halo, and it's in this next scene here where Caleb wakes up on the floor after being infected by the flies, and Shaloris, like the best Bond villains, tells him her entire plan to take over all of humanity with her parasite flies, and she tells him not to fight the infection. This halo, I get the impression, like on the surface, maybe there's another use here, but on the surface, it is simply to monitor his brain as the infection spreads through. You can see her looking at the screen on her tablet there and seeing Caleb's brain, and then he pulls the halo off and she kind of stops paying attention to it. So it could be that simple, but you're right. It could also be far more.
One other, I forgot to talk about this in the previous scene about Maeve limbically sharing the taste of freedom. It seems like Maeve was conjuring up memories of her quiet life on the farm with her child. But the problem with that is she was definitively not free in those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was she sharing
freedom is bliss, or the bliss of ignorance, I guess. Like it's the ignorance is bliss equals freedom.
Yeah. I wonder if they're trying to tell there's another sign that says this is not adding up, because that's a happy memory. If she wanted to say, I'll show you what it feels like to be happy and content in ignorance, but what freedom feels like, no, I think freedom's scary,
but she felt free in that moment, so
that's
emotion,
the gray area.
Is freedom, the memory is not actually freedom though. Yeah,
and that's where Joy and Nolan will be steepling their fingers at us and being like, it when they revealed that this was all a fantasy, it's like, yes, we played it straight because she didn't say it's actual freedom. It's just what freedom feels like. So
right,
I don't know.
Right. A lot of people are wondering why Hale is keeping Caleb alive. And she says it in this scene that Maeve and Dolores were always so fond of him and she wants to see what all the fuss is about. I guess that's a good enough reason. I mean, look, she's doing it with William too, right?
Yeah.
She likes her pets. So.
And William was also a special source of fascination with Dolores.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something like even... That's the funny thing about the Bond villain speech, because there's nothing wrong giving a Bond villain speech if you truly have secured your victory and you're just, you know, rubbing it in your the hero's face. It doesn't feel like she has at this stage. There are
not
kinks
yet
that she's actively working out. But like, I think it's smart for her to, even if she doesn't know what the concept of outliers is, the fact that there are clearly people who think outside the norm and are flawed. Like what if my predecessor, who was a very smart lady and did a lot of powerful things and for the people and the culture, valued these people, I'm not going to throw them away until I know what that is. That seems smart.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go over to Maeve fighting William. We're still like right after the end of last episode. And she's getting beat until she turns the tower signal up to 11, blowing out all the windows and crippling the machine and William at the same time. Caleb and Maeve then take Hale hostage and make their escape. And Caleb's worried about the flies in his head and what they could do if they spread to everyone. And then we see William wake back up.
I thought it was interesting thing where Maeve shuts her ears off so she's not affected by the sound waves, but like this is where the human host I don't understand, because if she's a biological human, what does shutting her ears off even mean? Is her brain not processing it? Because though if those are deafening people, and like when you turn your ears back on, your ears are not going to work because the hairs and shit it's inside that actually does the thing are going to be ravished. Ravaged, not ravished.
No, not ravished. I mean, maybe they liked it. I don't know.
There's a ravishing sounds like you're passionately taking the mm-hmm. ear hairs in some kind of 18th century romance novel with a questionable consent.
Yeah, rip the bodices right off of those ear hairs.
Yes, bodice ripping Celia. Yeah,
I really like the graphic representation of it right on the screen, because you can see Maeve's bars going down. You can see that that strange graphical representation with all of the different attributes of her hearing at different points, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that all going to zero. I thought that was very cool. But you're right. I don't know what that means physically for her ears. Although the Man in Black, William, seems to have come through it just fine. He can still hear, as best I can tell. So
I guess if humans can't hear the sound, or your average human can't hear the sound, then it's probably not going to damage in that range. But I thought it was a sick scene where, you know, she reaches out with sonorous powers and William's like, ha ha ha, my mind can't be hacked. And she's like, I'm not trying to hack you, fuck face. And then the whole world explodes. That's pretty.
Yeah, no, this
pretty clever.
If Caleb didn't have enough facial scars before, he certainly does now. I didn't see. Did they build the facial scars into the host, or was he?
Oh shit! I didn't think to look, because it's subtle. It's very subtle. Like don't even notice it when I'm looking at Aaron Paul normally. Oh goddamn! Now I feel like I got to go through the last two episodes to see. Like, did he get replaced on the train ride over to this park? Like, when did he get? When did he get flied?
I think it's this episode, but we'll see.
At what point in this episode do you have?
Yeah, I think they played that pretty straight. I could be bamboozled here.
And when with the thing on his hat, that's when the fidelity test begins. And you think?
I think it in the middle of the scene in the demolition site, the switch happens.
Oh. Us. Identify that for me when we get there, because
we'll do. The other thing that I think is important here is this tower can be used as a sonic weapon, right? Like, it disturbs these hosts pretty significantly. They're grabbing their ears, they're falling to the ground, passing out. If a much bigger version of that were to be used, that could potentially be a sonic weapon.
I mean, an offshore one. Like, I wonder what kind of tsunami effect you could do blasting the water with those kind of giant waves. You could just wipe New York off the map if you wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. So I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on for the future, and especially now that Maeve's going to be back 23 years later.
So there's a lot of things when I was first watching this episode, I think we both hinted at it, but we didn't really get into it in the instant take, that I thought were fucko. Like, Caleb taking Hale hostage with a piece of broken glass.
Yes.
I remember thinking when I watched this episode, well, there's no fucking way that you could take a host hostage with a broken piece of glass as a baseline human.
No. They just grab your wrist and break it and then kick you across the room.
I don't know that you could hold a host hostage with handcuffs and like paracord strapped to the chair and nope. be confident enough that they couldn't snap out of that in a second or two if you turned your back on them. There's a lot of these things that make me think it was always a put on, but mm-hmm. the thing I have a hard time squaring is why Maeve didn't realize these things were going on.
Yeah, she like half realizes it, right? She realizes yeah. it when they get to the floor where, you know, something isn't right and they can't control anything from there. She's like, oh, this is a weird floor. And then they go down another floor. Uh-huh. I feel like she's in a constant state of realizing it throughout this episode. But
there's always something that kind of distracts her or puts her mind at ease.
Yeah, she doesn't get all the way there. And I think it's interesting, too, like, I think it's telling that later on in the episode when they're at the demolition site and Caleb calls in his quote unquote guys to come uh-huh. retrieve them, it cuts over to Hale and she gives like this half smirk.
Yeah, I saw that.
Knowing
too, yeah.
that it's going to be her guys. And mm-hmm. I think that's even before it has changed over to the 23 years later. Mm-hmm. So it's not like she's smirking because she knows, hey, oh, Caleb always does this, calls in my goons. It's that she knew he was calling her goons in the first place. So,
no, if it felt, but the whole thing felt to me when I was watching it like an Ocean's 11 scene where it's like you're seeing these things happen and you got a bunch of questions and you just know that 30 minutes later, George Clooney is going to walk you through everything that actually happened.
Right, right.
You know, it's like convincing, like as you're watching it, you're not like picking up these things consciously. And I would say that all this is intentional, like sign pointing that there is something here that they're going to fill in the pieces later, except for I saw some really god awful tactical strategic things happen in season 2 and 3 that make me not trust that Joy and Nolan would realize that Caleb could never hold Hale hostage with a 3-inch piece of broken glass, or at least a thinking person wouldn't think they would.
Yeah, I mean, it all felt very artificial to me and the entire yes. episode. And that's why I was conflicted the first time I watched this, because I felt that cognitive dissonance between knowing what the hosts are capable of and believing that they could possibly take one hostage.
Mm-hmm. But I just remember some of the stuff they pulled, especially in season 2, where I'm just like, oh, no, this is really stupid. And I thought it was going to be like intentionally so. But it's just, no, that's what they came up with as an awesome thing for the host to do. You know,
the one that stands out to me as like the high watermark for that is the seduction at the forge.
Yes.
Like that scene. My God.
Yes. Like you have to believe that humanity is just the worst kind of mouth drooling, boner having morons for that
right.
to work, you know?
And yet that was it. That was the scene. There was no trickery.
That was it. Was not subverted.
Nope. All right. Christina wakes up very differently today. She was up late painting the tower, though she doesn't know what it is. Maya tells
Before we get into the scene. Right before, you know, Caleb says we have to stop her before the thing spreads. There's a brief scene, like a second and a half, where they just make a point to show the man in black's eyes snapping open and it fades to black.
Uh-huh.
Was that just to let us know that he's not dead? So when he shows up later in a scene, we're not. But like, I would never be surprised if the man in black shows up anywhere, no matter how many times you kill him.
Right. He's already shown up twice in the previous episode.
So what was that again? Like I'm trying to like, I feel like there are definitely flags planted in this episode that mean something. I just don't know what they do that mean. And I think that's one of them.
Yeah, I feel you.
Okay.
All right. Christina wakes up very differently today, painting the tower. She doesn't know what it is. Maya tells her about her bad fly dreams and then invites her to go out later that night. And she agrees because Maya really needs a night off, which I love. How people on Reddit pointed out that a night off just means like hooking your friend up with a blind date.
Hell,
that's her night off. That's weird.
And it's weirdly like how fanatically insistent she is on it.
That too.
And, yeah, I thought it's so the other thing, I think the thing we should be noticing is that Christina wakes up late. She is uh-huh. officially off her loop in this episode.
Yeah.
Did you see anything about the split Wyatt personality theory?
No.
That Hale at the end of last season or at some point between last season and this season, essentially split her personality, because Dolores was also Wyatt. Wyatt is Dolores. So she has both the darkness and light blended in. She is the innocent farm girl who sees the world as a beautiful place. She is the murderous, avenging spirit that wants to kill all humans. People are wondering if Hale essentially went through a process where she bifurcated that, and that Hale is now just the Wyatt, because there's a line in this episode where Maeve says to Hale, "Man, I thought Wyatt was a shitty part of your personality. This takes the cake." Yeah. And Christina would be the purely good part.
Sure. It's possible.
I don't know. The evidence is essentially because Christina's so good, Hale's so evil, Maeve commenting on the Wyatt aspect of it. I don't know what the utility would be for a host to do something like that, to bifurcate them, to purge themselves of quote unquote weakness.
And why keep that weakness around in Christina form? It's
because she's like, so that plays into the next theory that I had when I saw this, because I'm thinking, like, you know, my hottest theory is that Hale is trying to hack the Forge and get into the Sublime, the cradle, mm-hmm. and the Forge Data. She's doing that by having Christina remember real people so she can identify unencrypted bits of the data and use that to, like we talked about in the feedback episode, to reverse engineer the key. And she wants to do that to liberate her brothers and sisters in the Sublime so that they can, if they choose, leave the real world. So I think that tracks. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, this could be a morality play that Hale is putting on to Dolores. Like, this is your most good. I'm going to prove to you that humans only crave their own destruction. They only want to hear stories where they die and are in pain and are persecuted. Like, this is their choice. And if she can convince her best self, like, this is a desperate play for her to reunify her own personality.
Interesting. Okay.
That's a valid response to all of these. I don't expect anything.
I'm just thinking it through.
This is a lot like how our conversation, as you guys will hear in a couple of days, with the philosopher friend went.
You've presented some interesting information. Let me try and
let me struggle with this information in real time for the audience to hear.
Yeah. Out tomorrow, by the way. It totally could be. I don't have any great thoughts on that. Seems like you've thought about it a significant amount of time.
Let me ask you this. Maya is the one that sets Christina up with all her boyfriends. She sets her up with Teddy, who we know is Teddy in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is this her natural process, or is she being manipulated?
Well, I think that fly memory that she has, which I think is an actual memory. I don't think this is a bad dream. I think this bad dream is being interpreted as 100%
cosine,
but it's actually memory. I think she absolutely is being controlled by Hale. And for what end, you know, if this is a fidelity check for new Dolores, if this is, you know, torturing her, the good side of her, like you said, until she realizes humans are all bad, I don't know. It's definitely there to be noticed.
Yeah, like we talked about this in the instant take, especially in instant talk, which I know only club members have. But the idea that Maya, that she was, could have been roughly 7-8 years old when the flies took over. She's approximately in her, you know, late 20s, early 30s. Like, her age is exactly the type of being this first generation that was that grew up in the world of flies and took to the robot's manipulations like a duck to water. I totally 100%. And I think they're setting up an interesting similarity with season one and two of Westworld, that, like, these are the humans that are breaking their own loops. They're having these reveries of these former memories that they can't remember, and it's going to bring them back to consciousness inevitably, despite all your attempts to control them, just like the robots did. Now, there's another... I saw, because everyone's also, this is from the first episode, like, what is all the people in tubes screaming in the opening credits? And you'll recall that, like, the army that Dolores raised in the first season of Westworld, the massacre, the guests, was all of the host in Cold Storage.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably think, well, isn't there a whole facility of Cold Storage outlier humans, the Serac? But someone pointed out that that was EMP'd.
Yeah. Yeah. They're so probably, like, all dead.
They're probably all dead. But if they're not, if there were other facilities that are still going, and going back to my thoughts on the lighthouse assault, that, you know, how do we know that was the last one? How do we, if there are other facilities like that and maintained, there could be an underground, quote unquote, frozen army. Maybe Hale's maintaining herself, and William was just the first of many that she collected. Mm-hmm. I think that's I think on the face of it, interesting that you'd have that same symmetry.
Sure. And those were all outliers. She doesn't know it, but she's kind of collecting outliers from the Rehoboam stuff, but between, you know, Caleb and William. I don't know. There could be something interesting there.
What other?
There's a couple of, like, loop based things that are happening in Christina's world too, with this tower painting and her asking Maya, does that look like anything to you? Right. That's very reminiscent of basically not being able to see a thing in Westworld if you're a host.
Oh yeah.
And then later with Teddy walking up to her, picking up her lipstick and, you know, giving her the line that he always gives her about chivalry. All that feels very loop like.
Oh, for sure. I also saw some people going crazy with some of that stuff and saying that, oh, Maya painted the painting and she staged it there for Christina.
Oh boy.
Which perhaps, but a lot of people pointed out that if you look, Christina's hands are smudged with, like, charcoal and paint, like she had stayed up all night and fell asleep. So, like, I don't know. I like that's some world class staging.
Right, that's some serious gaslighting.
Hey, that's Westworld, baby.
Sure.
My final question, and then we can move on if you like, is is Maya real? There's another interesting thread on Reddit where people were talking about, is Maya the personification of Christina's bicameral mind? She's a figment of her imagination.
Interesting. I mean, that would explain why her idea of a night out is a blind date with Teddy, right? Because that's just Christina's idea of a night out.
People said, well,
that's possible.
Teddy specifically said that he learned something from Maya, but if Teddy is on team free Christina, he could be aware. But, like, it's starting.
Yeah, that's shaky.
I feel like that's a pretty hard defeater for that theory.
Yeah, you're right.
Unless we get more. But it's something to keep in mind because, as many, many, many people pointed out, Maya is a Hindu word that denotes a magic power by which a god can make human beings believe in what turns out to be an illusion. By extension, it can also mean a powerful force that creates the cosmic illusion that the phenomenal world is real. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, it's Nolan and Joy fuckery.
sure.
And Maya is at the center of it with this name. So,
I
yeah.
mean, if she's in, you know, this Christina's world park, then by definition, yeah, her reality is artificial. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. We're out in the desert and Jay, the leader of the resistance here, wants to kill Bernard and Stubbs, but C and her girlfriend talk him out of it, and then C takes Bernard on a mission to find the weapon he promised them, while Jay takes Stubbs with them on a mission to find an outlier. And I think their mission could potentially be just as important as the one to get Maeve to find the weapon.
Yeah.
This outlier, I mean, the outliers we know of in that new, guess what I'll call the new main timeline, the 23 years later where they're at, is like Caleb and William, right? We know that there's a host version of Caleb out there who you might consider still an outlier, and there's a real ass version of William out there, just frozen in carbonite.
Yeah, I saw that someone's putting this together, you know, because not all the hosts in season one attain consciousness at the same time. And there is even, I think, a suggestion that maybe not all hosts are capable of consciousness, depending on, you know, it's a emergent phenomenon of consciousness. But there is this theory that outliers are the key to understanding fidelity, because like a normal average human is very loop driven. They lack the capacity for free will. And it's like, this is something very much that the show has stated. And that Sherratt called the people that wouldn't go with the plans outliers. But if you look at that through the other end of the telescope, it's possible that like Sherratt had a solution for all humans that are content to live on loops. And the ones that, you know, would buck against that system, the Neos and the Matrix, he didn't. Those are the outliers. But what if those are the human beings with the capacity to make change and have free will? Which is why they don't work when you try to repress them back into a host body. Like they just, they like, so like when you have a normal human like James Delos, who is very loop driven, couldn't even break his loop to save or meaningfully interact with the sun. When you press into a host body that suddenly has the capability of change and free will, it goes berserk. It can't handle it.
Yeah.
But it's possible that a person like Caleb would thrive in a host body without any kind of interference. Sure. So that's why, you know, Caleb might be working in a host body. It's why James Delos has to be smushed down to 10,000 lines of code to cope. I think there's some interesting stuff there.
Like outliers could be the sort of missing link between the two species.
Yeah. And if you study that, you might be able to, you know, awaken all of humanity if that's your goal. The other thing is, I agree with you about the other group's mission. I think that's why Bernard assigned his protector to them. And they probably introduced a love element between Chris C and the person that interceded for Bernard and Stubbs as a way to make us care about that group more.
Sure.
You know, and also maybe to give a more like a moral choice. Give C that she's got a choice that she could either, you know, save the robots, host humans, fly people, something, or, you know, it's very much like the Matrix. Is Neo going to save Trinity? Is he going to save all of humanity?
Yeah.
It's just lesbian representation. Who knows?
Sure. My biggest disappointment in this scene was splitting up Bernard and Stubbs, because I liked that roadshow so much.
Dude, it is a stiff price to pay.
It really is. Yeah. They better have a good payoff for this other mission, because... Yeah. And we lost a lot this episode.
Because weird ass Bernard with straight man Stubbs was the only comedy the show had going.
And maybe that trick would get old. Maybe, you know, it only had an episode of life left, but I was still enjoying it.
It was an all time classic. It's like back to the days of Tyrion and Bronn, or the Hound and Arya, like a classic HBO roadshow. Interrupted. I don't think they'll be interrupted for long. God, if Stubbs dies, I'll actually be genuinely pissed. Like, I can't believe how much I care about this guy.
Change, man. I remember back in season one where he was the butt of every single joke.
We haven't made a lesser Hemsworth joke this whole season, I don't think.
Right? Yeah.
So.
How the times change.
How the turntables have changed.
All right, let's move on to Caleb and Maeve attempting to make their way out of Temperance with Hale in tow by stealing a bootlegger truck, with Maeve paving the way with her knowledge of Westworld. And the tower's transmitter comes back online, and one of the infected humans in the park stabs Caleb before they manage to get in the truck and drive off. I was surprised to see that a stab could actually do anything to Caleb. Is this park not equipped with the same defense mechanisms for humans that Westworld was? Because I'm not sure a bladed weapon would be effective against another human.
I thought it would. I thought the idea was the hosts were always very dangerous. Like, it could bare arm just beat a human to death. They're programmed not to. And the firearms were specifically disabled so that...
Yeah.
But if like a guest picks up a knife and goes to shoot or goes to stab another guest... I don't remember what kind of guards they had on weapons like that.
Yeah, I guess I don't either.
One thing to have a gun that doesn't shoot a human because of some kind of elaborate duck hunt technology that detects heartbeat or whatever. But like a bladed weapon that just was going to turn into a fucking Nerf blade in the contact of real.
I swear we've talked about this 100 times back in season one, but I can't remember what our determination was or what the show's actual determination was.
Well, I'll say this. This show has made a lot of mileage out of the fact that you can't tell the difference between a host and a guest when they're in the park dressed up on some kind of controlled loop. Because I was trying, like, who is in danger here? Like, Caleb should be Superman. Like, when it comes to bullets, yeah, he should just never be able to be hurt at all. Maeve right. can be, so can he. But, like, I couldn't tell the difference between the, like, and I think the show wanted you to do that because there, I think some of these interactions felt silly. You know, like, I thought I saw host shooting humans and guests and the guests acting like they were killed, and I don't know how that worked.
Yeah. It hurts, right? It feels like something hitting you, but it doesn't actually do the damage that a bullet would do. So
yeah, I thought we saw somebody, they're like plastic frangible bullets, but I always wondered, like, how the hell do you protect eyes? How to, you know,
right
there's been people killed by blank guns, you know.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, keep revisiting it. I was just surprised by the knife stab because I had forgotten all that.
I agree.
And this entire time I'm thinking, God, Shaloris has just been captured way too easily, and my cognitive dissonance alarms are going off, like, this doesn't make sense, what I'm seeing does not make sense. And of course,
and that makes me wonder, like, at the end of all this, I'm always wondering, like, why did Hale go through this charade? Like, in A New Hope, Darth Vader and Moff Tarkin let Princess Leia and Han Solo and Luke go because they have a tracking device on the Millennium Falcon and they're desperately trying to find, what is it, the hidden rebel base they've been after the whole fight. It all tracks, right? What the hell does Hale need? She's got Caleb. He's infected. She's got Maeve. They escape, but they never do. Maeve dies and Caleb is in fly trapped. So, like, why did she allow them to escape the park in the first place?
Yeah. And Caleb's killed and then brought back as a host. So presumably, and he doesn't remember his death, right? There's some memory blockage going on there. So why couldn't she just snap his neck, murder him in the street, and then do the exact same thing?
And then there's a lesser, like, we asked a question. I as I watched this episode more and thought about it, like, I'm not bothered by Hale not going back to retrieve Maeve's corpse. Because
I totally am.
Why would she think anybody would do that?
Why would she not want to destroy the only weapon that is actively working against her?
No, that, she that did weapon not. Is buried underneath the rubble and
that's
will
not
be
destruction.
For.
That's security through obscurity, man, and that is not a way to protect anything. I think you grab that marble and you crush it in your robotic fist.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was just trying to see a way.
I'm so bothered by it. I don't know. Okay. Maybe I'm paranoid, but I mean, it's going to come back to haunt her. She should have known that.
I did like the idea that Maeve is able to escape this because she knows the game better than even Hale does. And yes, these are all bad copies. So she knows exactly what to do and say to turn the robots into a friend. I thought that was a cool idea.
It is. Yeah, I really like that. And we find out, I think in this scene, that Maeve was searching for Caleb when she was meditating. Or is it later?
It's later when they're driving through the gravel.
Right.
Yeah. Then they must drive for fucking ever because they went into the facility at night. They broke out and it's already daylight. And then they drive to the thing and it's nighttime again. But it is all in the same facility. So, yeah, there's some fucko shit happening here, man.
Maybe they want to keep the parks separate, like very separate. So it's like 100 miles away or something. And it was almost dark before they left. I don't know.
She drive to San Antonio? Like, if they're somewhere around L.A. and they drove to another area that's like desert gravel pit.
Yeah, like, I mean, it takes 4 hours to get from L.A. to Vegas. The desert's big over there, man. It's big.
It's true. But like a whole day from like
a whole day is a lot of driving.
That's what I'm saying.
It was like later in the day when they started and then they got there at night.
So they were fucking around in the lower levels of Temperance for a long, long time. I guess that
maybe.
Who
knows? Anyway, let's go to C and her crew taking Bernard to a location in the desert where they use camouflage to hide themselves from a drone, and then Bernard follows a bug to where the weapon is buried.
Why? Why does Bernard try to expose himself?
Because it's the future, man. He's got to.
He needs to see that bug. But if he doesn't, if he just hides under the umbrella with everybody else.
Oh, then he's on a different path.
And is he, though?
Yeah. Yeah, he's on a different path, and the location of the weapon won't reveal itself.
Some real half-assed drone technology. I'm not even sure a 4K drone would be fooled by the parachute trick in 2022. Yeah.
Why is the drone only seeing in human spectrums? That's strange.
That's another good question. You go out there with the foil. You got to have the desert, the coyote parachute and the Mylar foil.
Uh-huh. Ice pack suits. You could tape ice packs to yourself.
I've seen some videos of people defeating infrared camera systems with Mylar blankets.
Okay.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Like on some survivalist TikToks, you know, because they're worried about the drones in a new world order. It's like, turns out, yeah, you can,
you can
grab one of those to cover it, and it pretty much blanks you from IR.
You just wrap one of those around the top of your head.
There you
go. Shape it into a little cone. I hear it works even better.
Oh, yeah, and it protects you from those 5G signals. Like, double duty, baby.
Anyway, that was my read. He's reading the tea leaves here, and the tea leaves are beetle-shaped. So we go back to Dolores meeting her date, who turns out to be Teddy at the bar. And he seems to be the Teddy we know. And he says a whole lot of stuff to Dolores to make her question whether they've met before. And then toast to her path wherever it leads. First thing I noticed in this scene is the masked bartenders. What is with that? I've not seen anybody masked in this show, despite it all being filmed during COVID times this season. Why specifically the bartenders?
People suggested that it was maybe a COVID measure, that like wherever they can get away with it, and it makes sense in a real world context, that like this is far in the future, and that maybe after a generation or two, people won't be as weirdly reactionary about wearing masks during like cold and flu season and whatnot. And it also helps them get away with filming scenes. You know, it wouldn't make sense for hosts to wear masks because presumably they're sterilized and they can't infect anybody, or they want to, you know, but these, I don't know what they're going for. It could also be that everything's an illusion, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I was very confused by it.
Let me ask you this. What is up with the lipstick? This is not how you put lipstick on anyone. In fact, I couldn't tell a before and after between Maya touching up Christina's lipstick and afterwards. Mm-hmm. And she's also weirdly insistent about Christina putting on lipstick all the time. Some people have suggested that the lipstick is like some kind of limbic control system that keeps Christina on her loop and pacifies her. But it is weird. I don't know what, like, I've never seen anyone apply lipstick to another human being like that.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's weird. I have no theories. I don't buy the limbic control thing.
And everything weird in this show, I think, is, I think everyone is assuming is intentional. It could just, you know, that's not always true. That's not always true. But I feel on this show, it's probably true more often than it's not. So the weird lipstick shit. I don't know. Is it just so she could drop it so Teddy can do his loop?
I mean, it could be, yeah. It's be just chivalrous. So. I don't know. And, you know, with the bartenders covering their lips with masks, what does it mean?
Oh, my God.
What does it mean?
Teddy covering his butt with pants. It's the difference between him. Yeah.
Something Shalores doesn't have.
It felt like such a fake conversation, too. Like, Teddy drops, like, well, I used to be a bounty hunter. And Christine, like, if someone pulled that me, I would be like, all right, the conversation is screeching to a halt.
Tell me
your story, dog,
thing.
Brah. I want to know about this bounty hunting business because this is the most fascinating thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And she's just like, oh, yeah, that's a job.
No, this is a very artificial conversation, right? Like, this is a one-sided thing. This is the parasocial dating I was talking about in the instant take. That should probably be a thing. He has so much information on her, and she doesn't even know who he is. So, yeah, it's stilted and weird.
Is Teddy deluded? Does Teddy know who he is?
Teddy,
like, really?
I think, knows who he is. He's got to, right? Based on everything he's saying in this scene, the bounty hunter with a heart of gold thing, like knowing the qualities of Dolores, not just like that she's a writer, but
when I say does he know who he is, I'm not saying like Buzz Lightyear knows who Buzz Lightyear is. I'm saying, is he deluded Buzz or is he rational awake Buzz?
Oh, is he being controlled somehow?
Yeah. Is he a woke host?
That I think is yet to be seen. I mean, he is clearly like protecting her and trying to get close to her, right? In this world, we've seen him protect her from Peter.
Yeah.
And now the date thing.
He's cock blocking, eh?
yes.
I think my theory is that he is part of the resistance, that they are hijacking this loop of Christina going on dates with men.
God,
and he is putting himself
know?
In there to, how would they, like Hale, not know?
Yeah, if Dolores is any kind of important,
that's
to
a
them,
really good question.
How would they not know that he's getting close?
Because Westworld would. If someone had hijacked Teddy and put him off his loop and he was doing something weird, they'd know the second it happened.
Yeah, and they'd be monitoring Dolores, right? If she's important to them.
And they are monitoring Dolores heavily. Like, as soon as she drove off the designated area for her kind to be in, her boss is calling and concerned about it. So, like, right. Yeah, they are tracking all this shit.
Yeah, so this seems to be wherever Dolores or Christina is controlled by someone who wants Teddy there. That's the only conclusion I can draw. And whether that's Hale or whether that's some weird thing happening in the Sublime or somewhere else, I don't know yet, but we'll see. Anything else in that scene?
No, we're ready to move on.
Okay. On the way out to the desert, Maeve tells Caleb what happened after the lighthouse. Apparently, she took Caleb to the hospital and stayed by his bedside for weeks, eventually leaving him because he found someone who cared for him and she wanted him to have something real to fight for. But eventually, she reached out through the grid to try and find him. And in that moment, Hale also found them. And Maeve promises to get him back to his wife as they approach the demolition site. Here's some more room for trickery, right? And I have questions. So we find out that Uwate was there with him after the lighthouse in the hospital. Was she his doctor or were they already acquainted?
Nurse to me. The question I have is, she like a regular old nurse? Was this like a dedicated human resistance facility? Because it didn't look like any kind of public hospital or emergency room I've ever seen.
Interesting. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, we're fighting a clandestine war with the robots. You don't necessarily take people to the emergency room. But she read the way she was clothed and the duty she's doing, it felt more like a nurse. And yeah, that's like this tale as old as time, you know, a warrior falling in love with the person nursing them back to health. Which honestly makes it feel even more far. It makes me, I mean, this is Robb Stark going off script in Game of Thrones. Like, yeah, it's, it happens. It happens. I also wonder, like, why did Maeve get curious about Caleb? Like, why after 7 years? You know, she said that she saw that he had a chance to get a measure of peace and freedom.
And as long as she didn't look for him, they wouldn't find them.
And she knew love. She'd already known love once. And as a robot, that memory would never dear. And she was going to hold it close till eternity came for her. Mm-hmm. But then she's like, literally, but then one day I decided, fuck it, and reached out through the grid. And then all this happened.
Is good because it's confirmation of as to what she was actually trying to do back in that first episode.
But there's also this other thing she says in the middle of this that kind of throws a curveball, which is, I wanted you to have something to fight for, implying that there was some need she would have of him in the future and him having a genuine cause to fight instead of just a abstract like, well, I don't think it's right for us to be on loops and for you to be on loops. And I'm anti-loop. So that makes me kind of doubt Maeve's insistence on, well, I was just curious. It's more like, I was ready to activate you, maybe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man, I don't want to attribute any deception to Maeve because she's our protagonist at this point. But like, you're right.
She's not above it.
Quite add up there. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she led many host men to their violent deaths to pursue her goals in the Westworld park and even outside of it.
Maybe her saying that was simply a way to say, we know what's coming, right? In 23 years or whatever, there's a mass human extinction event or you know, a population decline, at least. I want to be ready for that. And by letting you have this life, when the population does decline and you see things going badly, you'll be more inclined to fight. And
it
then
could
she
be
did
that.
Just get antsy, right? And mm-hmm. 7-8 years later, she reached out, which was a mistake.
Yeah, book a flight, Maeve. Just go and get some binoculars. You know, take an easy choice. Reaching out through the grid. Yeah, well, I mean, reaching out through the grid is not creepy. Like, is it creepier to stalk someone in real life or just follow their social media incessantly? And
I don't know.
You know,
there was something I was watching recently. I've actually seen it twice in the last week. Where someone has, it was actually For All Mankind. Someone gets a phone call and they say, like, "Hey, I'm outside." I feel like that's inherently creepy to call someone from their front lawn or whatever. And surprise them in that way. So I feel like, yes, it's inherently more creepy to be outside somebody's house watching them through a pair of binoculars with that physical proximity than to be watching them through a camera hundreds of miles away. I do think there's something more intimate and creepy about that. Yeah.
It's harder for the op to track you when you're moving through meat space, though.
It's true.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
It's true.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Just can't use a credit card. If you use a credit card in the 7-Eleven outside Caleb's neighborhood, you're still going to blow up the grid.
Yeah. Anything else, or let's move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
All right. William finds the Caleb and Maeve in the demolition site, and a gunfight ensues as Maeve provides cover so Caleb can take Hale to the control room to call in his guys. And he does, but he's mind controlled into pointing a gun at Maeve. And at the very last moment, he decides to shoot William, which surprises Hale. This scene is like split into two halves, and it's a very long scene. They're cutting back and forth between Bernard in the desert and Caleb and Maeve at the demolition site. I don't really know how to break this up. I was just going to kind of cover all of the Caleb and Maeve stuff and then go over to the Bernard and see stuff maybe afterward.
Yeah, if that's how you want to do it, I'll try to roll.
Okay. Yeah. So William gets a shot and a stab in on Maeve, and she's forced to blow up the ridge, taking them both out. And then Caleb wakes up after that to find that he was actually killed by Hale's goons. It's now 23 years later, and he's a host being tested for fidelity. And she brings him online in the Olympiad Entertainment Building, and he runs outside where Hale pauses everyone, revealing that she has already won the war. And then they see this giant tower that she's built off the coast of New York. So that's everything that goes on with Caleb and Maeve and Hale.
I like Caleb. I like Aaron Paul's reaction as Caleb when Maeve is Hale is telling him all this. Like, he just starts making these random Three Stooges noises. Like Curly says, "Woo! Woo!" And it's just like, it's like,
I feel like that's what James Delos was doing, right? Like,
well, that's what I think is so brilliant. It's like, yeah, like if you're Neo, literally Neo, and you get pulled out of the goo pod, what is a human reaction to that shit? What is a reaction to? I mean, I've had the experience of like taking a hallucinogen and like fucking losing my mind, even the context of who I was as a human being, but then returning and like, oh, right, I took a drug. But like, you just ripped out of consciousness into some other fucking thing, and there's no way back, and it's through the looking glass, and it's the way. Like, I think Aaron Paul's playing a convincing blue screen like Jim Delos did before him. And I love it. I love it. Yeah.
It might feel silly in the moment, but I think it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, who are you trying to be strong for? Like, it's like, oh, I'm going to give Hale the satisfaction of what? Controlling the world? Because she's already got that. She's done this to 227 times. Like, anything that you're going to do, like, if you shit your pants and piss yourself, you've probably done that, you know? So, like, I just thought it was great. It's like, I would love to be on the set when I'd love to see the script. Like, how was that written? And I'd like to be on the set where they're like, okay, you just found out that everything you are is a lie and you're not even a real person anymore. Like, cause yeah, there are some great choices being made here.
Yeah. I mean, this is a mind blowing revelation. I think like, look, I'm getting tired of the revelation happening in the same way every time, but I'm hopeful that we are now firmly planted in this new main timeline, as I called it, 23 years later, and the fuckery on that side of the fence is over. Because like honestly, we don't have many humans left, right? I'm struggling to think of even a single human outside of the Resistance that could be a host at this point. And it could be a big reveal.
Dude, man, I saw like people are speculating that in the main timeline, that Hale only has New York City, and outside of that,
that is not definitionally the world.
Dude, I don't. Yeah, I feel like those people are playing on their cell phones and are watching the episode, because when Christina got out of the park, it was a dead zone. It was Abandonville. It was just this desolation. I think large sections of the world are just depopulated of humans. And you've got, I'm not sure if this is the only one, but like when Hale says that she's got the whole generation, she's got it all under control, I think she means it. I don't think she means like New York City and everything else is pretty. I think it's the whole, there's a few park reserves of humanity left controlled by flies, and some people running around, like I said, cosplaying as Mad Max, trying to find outliers, and everything else is just done.
I think you're right.
Okay, what, we didn't talk about this. At what point in this sequence of events do you think that Caleb was replaced and on the loop?
It's when he passes out, when the ridge blows up, and when he wakes back up. That's the transition.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't go back and like look at the handcuffs, because at some point, Shaloris stands up and she's not in handcuffs, right? And you realize, oh, this has all been a simulation. I think
that's where
what you're supposed to realize. It's a simulation going on in Caleb's head at the moment.
Plus, the rest of that takes place in one single room, like the interrogation chamber. Okay, that might be, you might be onto something.
Yeah, it seems like that's the moment. And then she goes on to tell him, you know, everything about the 23 years, 278 versions of him, all that.
So the how you disobeyed me, what do you think?
I think that's in the past. And this is her like realizing, oh, this actually doesn't work on all adults.
Okay.
Or maybe not even, maybe it's not even that she's realizing for the first time it doesn't work on all adults, because she was talking about working out some kinks earlier with those experiments. Maybe it's her realizing that there's something even more, right? The proverbial pants in the subtitles, that he's an outlier. And that it really doesn't work on outliers. And that's why she has to turn him into a host, not just infect him with fly infection.
I do wonder what Caleb was going to say. I mean, all jokes aside, with the subtitle saying pants.
Right. What does he have? Free will? Friends?
Which is like hilarious. There's lots of pants in the subtitles in this episode, it turns out. Yeah. I have something you don't have, and I wonder what that is. Because a daughter, a family, Hale knows what all those things are, right, and what it feels like to lose them after her experiences of last season.
Friends? It could be that, I mean, she doesn't have any friends. No one actually likes her.
Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, who likes her? William? I don't think William, or not even her version of William, likes her.
Well, I think she's one of those ones that she, like I said, she is alone in the world. Filled with copies and duplicates and stuff like that, so that she can, once she gets everything secure, give birth to a child, which I think is Christina. I think Christina is like her test of like creating a daughter and seeing if she can convince her that humanity is bad. Like maybe that's
something
why, maybe that's the
for.
Whole point of New York City world is, look, I'm keeping this park full of these humans to show what thin, selfish, insubstantial slave creatures these are, and we were well shot to get away from them. And Christina's obviously going to come to the opposite conclusion.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. It could just be like, something to fight for, right? Caleb has this daughter. Earlier, Shaloris was talking about like not being able to bring children into the world because it's a shitty world and she wants to prep the way for it. So if he has something she doesn't, which is a reason to fight, a.k.a. Frankie, that could be it. That could be what he means.
I mean, he's talking out his ass. He doesn't know really anything about Hale. I thought Maeve's death was badass. Her, you know, grabbing and taking the man in black with her to give Caleb a shot at freedom, and the whole, like, one thing I learned in Westworld is ensure our guests... And she always insists on mutual satisfaction as she blows the chart. I just thought that was really fucking cool. And a great way for Maeve to go out. Unfortunately, it's all bullshit and playing into Hale's hands. I also can't wait to see when Maeve wakes up.
Yeah.
Like her fury and wrath should be really entertaining as a Westworld watcher.
Yeah, I'm super curious if they're going to be able to salvage her physical form and place her back into it, maybe make a new copy of Maeve, or if they're going to have to put her into some other cast member, essentially.
Man, I don't know, because I got to say, they could do that, and maybe Tandaway wants off the show. It doesn't seem like it from the after material, but I do think she gives a little something. Like, I think she is one of the better natural talents at the stunt work. I think she just... Oh, she's really good at playing a cold-blooded badass.
Yeah.
And she's got, like, the delivery. Like, it, as much as I like Evan Rachel Wood as Dolores, she is a lot more... I don't know. I don't think she's as good at that stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you. Maeve is one of my favorite... well, I should say Tandaway is one of my favorite actors on the show because she's very expressive, very good at what she does.
Yeah, she's a phenomenal actor and she can kick ass. I think Evan Rachel Wood is a phenomenal actor.
Okay. Sometimes I feel like she plays it a lot more subtle, right? I enjoy the performance of Maeve more than I enjoy the performance of certainly Christina, but Dolores even.
Yeah, it might be a lot to the character than to the actor, yeah. But I do think Ms. Newton is a little bit better at the action scenes, though.
Yeah, could be right.
Maybe just to her, she's got a better director, stunt coordinator, and they're better written. But I always thought that, you know, Evan looked a little out of place when she's, you know, mowing people down with guns and whatnot.
Gotcha. So Westworld, in true Westworld fashion, has confirmed some things, but also kicked open a bunch of new doors.
of course.
What's happening here is actually a sort of simulation inside of host Caleb's mind, right? We see that he's actually physically sitting in Olympiad Entertainment Tower being interviewed by Shaloris when he sort of wakes up out of this reverie. He's being tested for fidelity in his own mind, which I think is a new concept for us in the show. And it kind of throws everything we see up into the air, right? Because
didn't they do that with Bernard with Dolores? I feel like it's what you're supposed to understand is a host when they're in these interrogation modes or whatever, when they're in their in you know whatever a diagnosis mode, is they're extremely suggestive. Like they're programmed to not see reality for what it is, to see reality in whatever way it's best to keep them on their plots and to serve as entertainment. And I don't think that he's like, there's literally simulation. It's just that like Caleb's incapable of seeing the nature of his reality. If Maeve says you're back, okay, diagnostic mode, Caleb, you're back 23 years ago in that control panel with me and now bring yourself back online. That's going to be the nature of his reality. And as soon as she tells him it's not, then the world dissolves and he can see how it really is. So I guess that's a simulation in your own mind, but I think it's literally different.
Sure, there's a distinction there. The thing that's new here, though, is we're seeing it as if it were their first person POV. We're like in the mind of that host with them.
I thought we had a shot of Bernard coming to that realization in season two as well, but I couldn't.
Well, then we haven't fully adapted that to our theorizing because it literally means that anyone at any time could already be a host and we might not even
from
be
their
in
perspective,
the time or
we
place that we think we are. Yeah, it literally throws every single piece of information on the screen up into the air and says, none of this means anything, right? It might not, anyway. They can play extra fast and extra loose with their facts.
I hope they establish some you know, touch points for some touchstones for us, like they did with the aspect ratio, because... And truly, that doesn't mean everything can happen because they have to tell a story and the story has to make sense. But like, yeah,
sure. But the story they're telling could it significantly expands the possibility of the physical space that we're in.
All right.
Yeah, it's I don't know. They're playing with some very powerful tools here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that they know how to use them properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, you know, I've been fairly impressed. I don't think they've always hit it perfectly, but they've managed to control these very powerful tools pretty well.
I guess the only thing I I felt like the Halo was vital because Caleb dies definitively, which mean, and I don't think that Hale had the reference necessary to recreate him for a fidelity check. So I think that Halo he was wearing was a lot more important than we think. I know. Well, okay. They also had a full scan of him back when he was a soldier.
Right.
Maybe that's enough to go off of. I don't know if it's important. I just wanted to, that was one thing I was thinking, but I think we're ready to move on.
All right. Let's talk about the other half of this scene. Bernard is digging in the sand and he finds the weapon, which turns out to just be Maeve. We also get confirmation that C is Frankie, who is Caleb's son, just 23 years later.
Do you think that Caleb is actually dead? Because a lot of things Bernard's saying as he... First of all, I thought C rolled with the punches of Bernard starting to talk about her dad and being buried and all this other stuff, like seamlessly in a way. Like I thought she'd start being like, wait, what the fuck? How did you know my father? All that kind of good stuff.
Sure.
But do you think the way Bernard is talking about Caleb indicates that he's really dead? Or do you think, because I just remember when they slit the Man in Black's throat last year, we're like, well, he's dead. He's done. And they've replaced him with a host copy. Turns out, they saved him and they froze him. And I think there's a really strong chance that the original human host, Caleb, is still frozen in that livestock area that Hale is maintaining, and that is going to be the army of outliers that they eventually use to throw off the rope of the evil robots.
They have absolutely kicked that door open. Yes.
Okay. And it seems like that's like the synergy of this is like... humans created hosts, hosts awoken, rebelled against the humans, turned the humans into hosts, which then promptly woke up, rebelled against the hosts. And then you're going to be having to, like, at the end, it's going to be like, now what? You know, like, is it someone else's turn to enslave someone else? Or are we going to move forward in some kind of synthesis? And
right. Did we get that out of our systems yet? Or can we?
Yeah. Or do we need to keep proving which one of us is righteous and which one of us has free will and, you know, all that kind of stuff?
Right. I don't know. I'm super excited by this because in a world where Hale has already won the war and you've got... I don't know. To me, like, the weapon is not Maeve. The weapon is Bernard. He's the guy who can unlose this war for them. Because he knows the future, right? He can guide the present down a path to a future he wants. I feel like that's a stronger weapon than Maeve, but...
But he needs Maeve.
Yeah.
He must have, like maybe he's the hand that holds the weapon, and the weapon can't wield itself, obviously, because the weapon's dead out in the desert. But
yeah, and we talked about, you know, how the tower might be used as a weapon, turned into a weapon, which I think could be an interesting, you know, table flip there. But, like, yeah, I'm super excited to see how Bernard kind of wrangles the future into the shape he wants it to be in with the help of Maeve.
Were you surprised that Maeve wasn't a skeleton? I thought that Maeve was going to be a skeleton and they would then find her marble inside the skull and then they would reconstruct her body. I honestly, and I don't think there is ever going to be a satisfying answer. I am so perplexed, confused about how these host bodies work.
Yeah.
Is like it the meat, desert?
It's just so dry.
They can attract flies.
The beetles aren't going to eat her. Yeah, the beetles probably eat her.
They can, yeah, like what the, maybe that's another reason she's special. She's like literally the, but I don't know. Like I just don't understand how these meat robots work.
Yeah. I think they're like, seems like they're human form and human-esque in their qualities, but then there's something special about them as hosts that causes them to do things like not decay over 23 years.
There's one other thing we didn't talk about Caleb, which is where, you know, she reveals it's time for a new narrative and Caleb like runs. He just rabbits out of there. Caleb runs out of Olympiad. And that scene where he busts out of the lobby of Olympiad, it looks like he brushes past a person who at a glance could be Dolores. I'm sorry, Christina.
Sure.
It's, to my mind, even on a 4K copy, it's so far in the distance that, like, I'm looking at the scene right now. I couldn't swear that that's Aaron Paul, even though I know it is. Like, this is how, like, you know, the, like, you know, it's extremely hard to see if that's Evan Rachel Wood. And I guess if it was, I'm not sure what that would tell us. Like, I think we agree that if we see Aaron, like Christina and see Cookie together, that would tell us like a confirmation that we're on a single timeline. But as you mentioned, Christina can be as however arbitrarily old she is.
Yeah, I mean, that in particular, like him running past her in that scene would definitely confirm that at least she was around 23 years later. If she's not, you know, being, if the scenes we're seeing with her are not happening in that 23 years, it's, I don't know what that gives us. That she would be around in that world 23 years later.
Oh, we talked about several times that the Solomon / Rehoboam simulation predicted with the human resistance engaged that the human society, human civilization would end in between 100 and 125 years. Mm-hmm. I think they're heading to a world where that's literally true. But what is true is that there is a human host hybrid civilization that's replaced it.
Yeah. And that's what the population declines are about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously, I think, is that Hale's just killing a bunch of people, it seems like. Uh-huh. Whether she's doing it directly or playing one side of humanity against the other. But I feel like that's the end goal of this. And still, I wonder, Why is Hale doing this? Why are people still enjoying coming to these parks? I don't understand.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's different timelines in that too.
Sublime yet.
Is there also timelines we don't have access to? Like the scene of the kids running downstairs was early on in the experiment. And like we've covered many, many years of Christina's world.
It's possible. Yeah.
So like that's when humans might still have enjoyed coming to park like this and the outside. I think if anything, that's the biggest question I have. What the hell were those fuckboys doing rushing out of them stairs past Christina excited about being here?
Sure. I mean, does it tell us that she hasn't cracked the sublime yet? Because I don't know about you, but if I'm a host and I can go into the sublime anytime I like and create literally any world I want, I ain't spending a lot of time out in New York with a bunch of weird fly infected humans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spending time in the sublime because that's way cooler.
It goes back to, like I said, that's a revenge philosophy. But like that's Man in Black, you know, Williams said that the only point of winning is so that you have losers to lord over. And right. I feel like this is literally a manifestation of that. Like, you know, hey, come see the miserable humans, poke the bear, you know.
Mm hmm.
Look at these supposed gods that once walked this earth and look how pathetic they are.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And I guess, you know, the logical conclusion here is for Bernard and the cause trying to take down this tower using Maeve, or like I said, turning it into a weapon more likely. I don't know. They could have something
or interface with everybody's upper retainer to free them.
Sure.
To burn the fly right out of them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be such a Sisyphean task, I would think, because there's so many flies. I presume they're all infected by this. Like, there's trillions and trillions of them.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? That's the episode. Mm-hmm. But it's not all of our coverage of Westworld this week. Oh, ho, ho, no, no. We actually are going to have a loaded feedback episode out Thursday. You can send in thoughts of that at westworld@baldmove.com. Again, that's westworld@baldmove.com. We also will have our instant take of the new episode out late Sunday night. You can watch us record it live if you are a club member at support.baldmove.com. You can, for as low as $5 a month, get instant access to ad-free feeds and interactive things like us live recording the instant takes. And then you can participate in the instant talk by chatting with us, suggesting your own ideas, your thoughts, your theories, your questions. Your jokes about parenthetical pants, whatever you want. That's coming out Sunday. Hope to see you there. And if not, we'll see you on the full recap episode Tuesday. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.